No mai, Heidi mai, ki tēnei hōtaka. Welcome to the panel on RNZ National Monday evening. Lovely to be with you this evening. I am joined by Heather Roy, former ACT MP and Minister, now Professional Director and Principal of consulting company TalkPoint. Heather, great to have you on.
Kia ora, Wallace. Thank you.
And also James Elliott, English language teacher, lawyer. James, kia ora. Nice to have you here as well.
Thank you. Thank you, Wallace.
Now, to this first, people are struggling to come to terms with how a trip to the shops ended in tragedy, grief enveloping Bondi Junction, Westfield. Six people died in a shocking stabbing attack by 40-year-old Joel Galchi, who was shot dead after a police officer confronted him. Eight are still in hospital with conditions ranging from stable to critical. Now, Andrew Reid is a lifeguard. He's well known from the show Bondi Rescue. Andrew refused evacuation orders to leave the mall. I started by thanking him for talking to the panel.
No problems, mate. Thanks for having me.
An unthinkable tragedy, shocking. Andy, tell us how the situation unfolded for you.
Oh, I mean, look, it was horrible. I was just in Maya buying a bunk bed for my kids, and we had a sales assistant come up and tell us to evacuate. There was people being stabbed outside, and we were just like, wow. And so we went to evacuate, and they'd shut the roller doors. So the shutters on the front of Maya, and just as we sort of walked closer to the holes in the shutters to, like, look out to see what was going on, I heard two gunshots ring off, and it sort of happened just around the corner. So we couldn't really see where the gunshots had come from, and then I look sort of down on level four because you can see sort of through the levels, and there was just a lady down there, and she was kind of bleeding out, and I was like, oh, she's not in a good way, and so I couldn't get out the shutters on level five, so I went to the internal escalators in Myer and went down to level four, and there was a guy, and he said, mate, everyone's got to evacuate, and I said, no, I need to get out. There's a lady just outside those shutters that are that's bleeding. I need to go and help. And so I said, can you open the shutter? And he said, are you sure? And I said, yeah, 100%. And went under and went around. And as I got around the back of the escalators and firstly saw her, and then I saw the next sort of every sort of 50 metres, there was a patient and then another patient and then another patient, all with pretty bad wounds. And there was a fair bit of blood. So we just... me and a couple of other bystanders worked on the first lady and got her as stable as we could. And then I went over to the next patient that was being dealt with by a couple of police officers. But at this stage, they thought there was still another attacker in the building. And so I sort of relieved them and started doing CPR on the second patient. And then the cops took off looking for the other attacker. And I worked on her for a couple of minutes, and then more paramedics arrived, and we put a defibrillator on her and tried to get her back, but she was just in a really bad way. So, and then I went to head down to another patient, and there was another ambulance officer there with her. But as I went down, there was just an empty pram sitting there, and I just thought it's kind of weird because all the shutters were down on all the shops, and I didn't really know why there was a pram there. And anyway, I just sort of moved on and went to the third patient, and she was, she'd been worked on by another ambulance officer, but they'd sort of declared that she wasn't going to make it, sadly. And by that time, a lot of police and ambulance were around, and I realised that I was sort of needed to let the professionals do their thing. And I got out of there, and I was walking up towards Bondi Road to wash off, and I got a phone call from a friend of mine saying that one of our good friends is in hospital, and she's in a critical condition, and she had a 9-month-old baby, and sadly, I put two and two together and realised that was probably her pram, and that's what had happened, and she just happened to get out of there, but sadly she didn't make it either, and her little baby's still with us at the moment, which is good.
Yeah.
Stable, serious, stable condition, and like, just a horrific event in general.
Andrew, you know, there you are at this mall, a popular Bondi mall, there to buy a bed. This is the last thing that you or anyone there would you know, think of happening. I can imagine that you yourself are still trying to come to terms with it.
Oh, mate, yeah. I mean, we see some pretty gnarly stuff on the beaches. Yeah. Nothing compares to that, but, yeah, I mean, and then sort of, I guess, putting the pieces together by watching all the, you know, the footage and stuff on the news, it just gave it so much more depth, and it's just horrible. And then to know that a friend of mine was in there, and I think you're sort of more personally connected when you know someone that's been involved in something like that. It's hard. But, you know, I'll do all the right things and get all the right professional help and, yeah, just make sure that we're, that I'm mentally looked after, you know.
Yeah. Well, Andy, go well. I really appreciate your time on the panel here on RNZ in New Zealand. Thank you and take care.
No problems, mate. Thanks for the chat.
Andrew Reid, lifeguard, he was in the mall there. As you hear, Heather, absolutely shocking event. Hard to know what to say. Suffice to say that many New Zealanders will also know Bondi and indeed that mall, Heather.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it's a terribly tragic situation, and you know, you have to take your hat off to Andrew for putting his first aid skills to good use. But, you know, you never quite know how you're going to react in that situation, and there were probably others who assisted with securing the situation too. And, yeah. you know, well done to everybody who just kicked in and did the right things.
Yeah. Now, later we are going to be talking to someone who kept their hair salon open for those who are fleeing that mall. That's just after 6:30. Quarter past six to other big news. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres says the Middle East is on the brink. Now is the time for maximum restraint. This after Iran fired more than 300 missiles and drones at Israel. Nearly all were intercepted, Israeli military officials said. Iran's expected response was for Israel's recent strike on the Iranian embassy complex in Syria, which killed several of Iran's top commanders and was its first direct attack on Israel, says the New York Times. With us is Professor of International Law at Waikato University, Al Gillespie. Kia ora, Al.
Kia ora, Wallace.
How significant is this development?
We all know there's a lot of tension in the world right now, and this is an extra added tension because we are on a knife edge of what could become a very nasty, wide regional conflict.
Who are Iran's allies, Al?
They don't actually have allies as such. They have a few friends. I would say China and Russia as a friend, Syria and Venezuela. But none of them are tied by a defensive treaty, and that's critical with regards to Russia and China. So even though they may be supportive of Iran, they will defend their interests at the Security Council, they won't go to their aid if Israel strikes them militarily.
Interesting. Let's bring the panel in. James.
Yep. Seems to be so much sort of murkiness to this, Al. I'm just wondering, is one outtake from what's happened with the approach from the Iran drone that Israel's allies immediately come back to the existential question of defending Israel, and Gaza becomes a secondary issue, at least for a couple of days? That plays out quite well for Israel, doesn't it?
That's a fair comment, and I mean, there's a lot of things we've got to look out for in the coming days, but one of my biggest concerns is that the humanitarian catastrophe in Gaza will become secondary, if not invisible, if this other conflict now takes place.
How are you seeing this latest development, Heather Roy?
Yeah, well, we're lucky that we're sitting on the other side of the world, aren't we, and observing rather than it having an immediate impact, although ultimately it does impact trade and other things for us. But I think that it's difficult for us to put ourselves in the mindset that exists in the Middle East. So Israel and Iran were allies until 1979, and here they are in a completely different situation, which is a puzzle. And you do wonder what prospect there ever is of peace in the Middle East. I don't know, Al, if you've got any thoughts about that, but, you know, there are Kiwis everywhere in the Middle East, MFO, United yeah. Nations missions. What prospects can they have of peace ever being achieved when they've been there for, well, we've had a presence there for a very long time trying to assist with peace?
Al? Oh,
goodness me, that's a question. I think eventually we will get to peace, but it might take some time. I fear the war is going to escalate. The best pathway to peace right now would be restraint, and Israel has that option if they don't respond. I fear they will respond. I fear it will be overwhelming response, and that will pull in others in the region. The biggest risk here is that the proxies in Lebanon and Yemen and Syria also join the fight at the same time, in which case it will go sideways, and then Iran may decide to strike countries which are closer to it, like Emirates or Jordan, because it can't reach the further away ones.
Goodness, I see that. Yeah, I see that President Biden has said to Israel, treat this as a win. The fact that Israel was successful in rebuffing the attacks, is he saying, look, just do not respond in kind?
He's saying a number of things here. I mean, this is the chance that Israel, which until very recently has almost become a pariah state, has got a chance to take the upper position and turn the other cheek and not advance it. But he's also saying, and this is critical, that the United States will only help defend Israel. It will be no part of an attack on Iran. But whether Netanyahu will be able to show that restraint when he's spent the last 10 years talking about the threat of Iran, and now they're saying that they're treating the Iranian attack as a declaration of war, it's questionable whether they will show the restraint that is necessary for peace.
Now, another issue will come up, Al, many will be asking, and that's the nuclear factor around this. Do we know if both Iran and Israel have nuclear weapons?
As a best guess, Israel probably has about 90 nuclear weapons. It's a non-declared nuclear state, but it's commonly assumed that they're well-armed. Iran, in theory, has the capacity to make maybe two or three bombs and with what highly enriched uranium it has. But the latest intelligence would suggest this has not yet been weaponized.
Okay. Now, just finally, before you go, Al, what are the key issues to watch in the coming weeks?
Well, the first thing is the way Israel may respond and whether it's proportionate or whether it uses overwhelming force. The second thing is if it starts to engage the other members of the region, and that will have implications for us because we've pledged to defend part of the Red Sea as an international waterway, and so we might find that we're asked to contribute more, which I imagine would be helping out our friends relieve their patrolling duties elsewhere so they could deploy their more advanced assets to the area.
Okay.
Third thing, keep an eye on Gaza, because that's a catastrophe which is just going to get worse while this other war plays out.
Watch this space, Al Kiura. That's Professor of International Law at Waikato, Al Gillespie there, 21 past 6. The panel, RNZ National. We have Heather Roy, James Elliott joining me today. Now, the other big news was this, how to fix the traffic woes of Wellington CBD. Many have had thoughts on this. The last government thought that light rail and an improved Mount Vic tunnel. Now the current government is exploring the option of a long tunnel, twin two-lane, four-kilometre tunnels running from just north of the terrace to Kilburnie. Now, to put it in perspective, the Waterview Tunnel in Auckland, which, just as a declaration of interest, I lived right on top of for 7 years while they were doing their construction. 7 long years. which was once labelled the king of transport infrastructure. That tunnel is just 2.4 kilometres long. Could it be dethroned in the future, to discuss? Wellington local commentator Dave Armstrong. Kia ora, Dave. Welcome.
Kia ora, Wallace. Nice to be here.
Well, there you go. Could put the great Waterview Tunnel. What do you think? Shaving 50 minutes off a trip from airport? I mean, that sounds good, doesn't it, Dave? That's a good saving, I reckon.
Well, it does sound good if you're driving there and you're stuck in traffic. A lot of the time there isn't a congestion problem, but of course during the day there is. The other thing is a third of the traffic gets to the airport, two-thirds pairs off and goes other places. So we're not going to reduce Wellington's congestion with this, but it is going to mean some people get to the airport quicker. I'm like you. I have no conflict of interest. I live in Newtown and it takes me 20 minutes to cycle to the airport, and I'm old and unfit. And if I had an e-bike, it'd probably take 10 or 15.
We don't all want to cycle to the Wellington Airport, do we?
No, I know. Well, a light rail would get us there pretty quick, but that's been kiboshed. And, you know, we're talking $10 billion is what some people have said is the cost. And if you look at Transmission Gully, which I actually do like, that costs double the budget. If you do it as a PPP, it costs double the budget. So we're up to $20 billion and we haven't even built it yet.
Okay.
So the money is astronomical. Look, I'm not, you know, I'm not being... it might work. There's a lot that sounds nice, that you don't have trucks in the city. SME and Brown said you don't have trucks in the inner city. There's a place called London, which I think has a green or communist mayor. It had another communist mayor called Boris Johnson, who didn't allow trucks in unless it was between midnight and 5 a.m. So there are things you can do to solve problems that don't cost $10 billion.
Okay. Well, all right. I want to gauge to those from Wellington who are listening, do you support this 4-kilometre tunnel or not? 2101. You can email me, thepanel@rnz.co.nz. Wellington's Heather Roy, jump on in.
Well, anything that gets traffic moving is a good thing in my view. But and we have this absolutely ridiculous situation in Wellington where State Highway 1 runs right through the CBD. And so I do think that we should be looking at every available option. I'm not sure about light rail. I think we haven't got the population density to support that. And so I am in favour of this investigation. And remember that a decision hasn't been made.
No.
The NZTA presented a compelling case for why the option should be back on the table, according to Minister Simeon Brown. And even Tory Farnow, after saying she didn't support it and wanted the money spent on water reforms, did say that it would free up surface level road space for housing and walking and cycling and public transport, all of those nice things that we would all like to have. So I do support an investigation. Okay. I want to see what the funding looks like. I think Dave's sort of plucked out $10 billion and then $20 billion. I'd like to know what the real cost is, Dave, but, you know, good on you for having a stab at it.
Dave, you've plucked those numbers out.
Well, I have to agree with Heather that the State Highway 1 going right through town and the airport is very difficult. We are topographically challenged in Wellington. Mm. The thing that worries me, though, is that there's been no investigation of things such, but not just by this government, but by the previous government. There's been no investigation of actually what the congestion is, what causes it, where it's going. So, for example, I remember suggesting to the last regime, to the ministers, what about Paraparaumu Airport taking more of the load, maybe even being subsidised? What about Hutt Hospital being and Kenepuru being upscaled so that you don't have this massive traffic to Wellington Hospital? They laughed out loud and just said, why would we look at that? So I think there's a real problem, and Heather's absolutely right. You can look at the investigation. They're only asking. They're not saying it's going to happen. The number I got given that wasn't $10 billion was $3.1 billion at the beginning of 2021.
Which is what the Waterview Tunnel costs, am I right, around that?
Yeah, I think so. And the other, I mean, Darren Ponder, who is not a spend-go-crazy guy, he's actually, I think, quite conservative. He said it was eye-wateringly expensive. So they obviously did some numbers. But there's also the seismic thing. I mean, there are tunnels in places with earthquakes, but that will add a bit to that too.
Okay, so our really big response to this, keep that coming, do you support it or not, 2101. Many no's. People are astonished at the price. Here's one. David says, I'm totally in favour of the tunnel for Wellington, exactly what's needed. But if it's going to be done, do it right. It has to be a minimum of 4 lanes and designed for 110 k's per hour. None of the slowing down nonsense of the Waterview Tunnel, and get the Swiss or Italians to do it because they know how to do tunnels properly. James.
Oh, there you go.
Well, throwing around these staggering numbers of $2 billion, $4 billion, $10 billion, I like us if we just break those down into units of lunches for food for kids, of nurses' placements, of teachers' placements. That's what you're looking at, that as a
alternative spend. Yeah, but that won't get me to the airport faster.
No, true. It's important we get that. My experience in Auckland is that all of the change in Auckland just gets you to the congestion at the airport quicker. That's all that does. You'll still have congestion. It's just now been bumped out to where the airport is. But it's interesting Dave was saying about the seismic risk. So there are 4 fault lines in Wellington. And the prediction is the nearest one would be, I think, 150 years with one in 150-year event. So by the time light rail is finished, it'll be 150 years.
Okay. But, Dave, as a long-time Wellingtonian, are you in part excited by this? Because you must
not
be...
Not at all.
You must be...
No. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm not excited when I hear people say we don't have the population on can't afford rail, which last cost $1 billion, and this could cost, you know, no way would it cost less than $3 billion. It would probably cost $5 billion or could be $10 billion. You know, so I think it's all relative. To be honest, though, looking forward, I think transmission, I'm driving north tomorrow. I like Transmission Gully. I think it's great at the moment, and I was opposed to it, but who's paying for it? Why is there not a toll on it? You know, why are we saying things like light rail make people pay, but things like motorways, well, let's
The public should be paid. I agree. PPPs, toll roads, they're all worth looking at, and I hope that they'll be part of the investigation. Because you're right, someone has to pay for that, and I'm a great believer in those who use it paying.
Well,
and a congestion tax in Wellington has been on the table both by National and Labor, but especially National. I think that's a great idea.
And they've been shown to work really effectively in other cities.
And if you're going to build something for $10 billion, well, you know, if it costs that, or $20 billion, put a congestion tax on it until you've paid for it. And then, you know, like our sludge levy in Wellington, we pay for that and it's actually not costing the council anything. Well, it's making Wellingtonians furious, but it is actually a levy to pay for something.
David, Shane's got the possible solution, and it's quite simple. Shane says, I live in Candala. Where is it? It's just gone. There's so many texts about this particular issue. I have no problem getting to the airports. You just need to wake up a bit earlier. So is the answer for people like you, David, to buy an alarm?
Well, the thing is, I don't need to because I get it. It only takes me 20 minutes. It's actually faster the cycle than a taxi. So I don't need an alarm. I can sleep in. The thing is, though, what we don't understand, you know, well about Wellington is that 80% of the time there's not a problem, but the 20% is just, it's like saying everyone goes away on Boxing Day. We need to change. We need to build twice as many roads. You could say, let's just abolish Boxing Day, and I know ACT want to do that. Let's just make it. Let's make public holidays not such a big deal, and let's give people holidays in February when the weather's better. Let's be more flexible with schools. You know, our thinking is incredibly tunnel visioned. We don't think laterally. We don't look for different things. We don't say, hey, there's not as many people coming to work because they're working at home. You know, we don't sort of look that way. And I think there's creative solutions to Wellington's problems that don't cost $5 or $10 billion.
Always great to have you on, Dave. Kia ora. That's Dave Armstrong there telling us to get out of our tunnel vision thinking on the tunnel. And the response has been quite something. What a bunch of total misguided thinkers around this ideologically driven Politburo we now have running this country. I can't find $3 billion to execute a project that was well underway to ensure a modern, dependable Cook Strait ferry link, but can now talk about building a 4K tunnel across Central Valley. What are their priorities? So do you support a 4-kilometre mega tunnel in Wellington, or do you not? 2101, email the panel at rnz.co.nz. I've got to admit, though, I bet you are so anti-Waterview Tunnel, James, but guess what? You go through it. Oh, it's quite nice.
It is quite nice. Yeah, but I've had so much experience of that congestion point just being at the other end. But how are you without the shaking?
Fantastic. Yeah. Very nice. Yeah, no shaking required.